Chapter 3. When the sun rose pink over Fire Mountain, Nim phoned Jack again, but there was still no answer. No ring, nothing at all. Nim checked the phone, the satellite dish, the connections between the solar panel and the phone's battery charger. But everything looked the way it should. She checked her email, even though she knew he didn't have a computer on his boat. To jack.russo@explorer.net, from aka at incognito.net, date Tuesday, 30th of March, 2221. Dear Jack Russo, your article, The Life Cycle of the Coconut Palm, was as fascinating as a feature film and as fact-filled as a documentary. But I still have a couple questions. One, how long do coconuts float? Two, do they float well enough to make a raft? Three, how could I build one? Thank you, Alex Rover. A letter, said Nim. She knew it wasn't hers. She knew that Alex Rover was just asking Jack a science question, but it was still a letter. It was as if someone, somewhere in the world, knew she was alone and was saying hello. To aka at incognito.net, from Jack Russo at explorer.net, date Wednesday, 31st, March, 6:45. Dear Alex Rover, Jack is busy doing science. I hope he will answer your questions tomorrow or maybe the day after. From Nim. She had heaps to do, and that was good because she didn't want time to worry about Jack. She made banana and coconut mush and snuggled warmly with Selkie to eat it for breakfast. Fred always forgot that he didn't like bananas, so he snitched a bit from her bowl and spat it out across the rock. Yuck, Fred, said Nim. She didn't feel much like eating now either. She watered her garden with bamboo pipes trickling coolly from the pool. She towed wagon loads of seaweed to spread around the plants. She picked 10 ripe strawberries and a handful of peas. Jack loved strawberries. She made a new broom with a fallen down palm branch and swept the hut again. She filled in Jack's charts with a big no across the space for rain and the numbers for the barometric pressure and sea temperature and east for where the wind was coming from. She wished it would turn around and blow Jack home, and she climbed the tall palm tree just in case she could see the white sails. And when she couldn't, her stomach tied itself into a hard, tight knot, and she went on being busy. She mixed up dough to make some bread. It grew swollen and puffy, and she punched it hard in the middle, oofing the air out of the puffiness and the knot out of herself. She punched and rolled it over and over till her arms were floppy and the dough ball was smooth. Then she wrapped it in a fresh banana leaf and carried it to the Hissing Stones, where Fire Mountain met the rocks of Keyhole Cove, and fountains of steamy water sometimes shot high and wild into the air. Today there was just the small yellow pool splattering slimy bubbles, and the rocks around, too hot to touch, hissing steam from every crack, and the smell like a rotten frigate's bird's egg smashed on the beach. Nim squatted at the edge, out of the way of the wind and stink. She shaped her dough into 8 flat pancakes and flicked them one by one onto the hot rock. What Nim liked best about cooking bread was watching the dough she had mixed from dry flour, yeast, and water puff into warm, fresh bread. Science, Jack said, but Nim thought it was magic. Today it was nothing. Today, when the bread bubbled and puffed in the middle, it didn't even make her smile. When she flipped it over with her bamboo flipping stick and then neatly back onto her banana leaf, it was just bread, because cooking bread was what she had to do today. And if she did everything that she was supposed to do, then Jack would come home tonight and everything would be all right. So she went on doing jobs, busy, busy, busy all day. She heaped fallen branches into a bonfire, beachcombed from the black rocks of Keyhole Cove to Shell Beach in front of the hut, and then from the sands of Turtle Beach right to the frigate bird cliffs at the end. And she found 3 giant seeds shaped like hearts, 10 new seashells, and half a wooden paddle that made her think, oh no, but it wasn't Jack's. Suddenly she was too tired to do anything more. She made a banana sandwich and curled up on the rock between Selkie and Fred to read the last chapter of her book. When she finished, she felt happy and sad at the same time because the ending was warm and smiley, but she didn't want to say goodbye to the people in the book. I'll read it again, Nim decided, and read the title out loud as if she'd never seen it before. Mountain Madness by Alex Rover. Alex, Rover!" she shouted. Fred fell off the rock and Selkie honked crossly at being woken from her nap. "Sorry," said Nim. She opened the book again and unfolded the newspaper bookmark. "Alex Rover, author or hero? The most famous writer in the world has written a new book, Mountain Madness. Papyrus Publishing, $15.95. Cliffhanging adventure, romantic love story. Read it and you'll think you're living it. You'll feel the cold rush of wind as you jump out of a plane, the sweat on your palms as you rappel down a cliff. So is Alex Rover the author or the hero? He couldn't describe these adventures if he hadn't lived them, but Alex Rover is not a typical macho action man. Anyone lucky enough to meet him will find a very special human being, a mountain climber who finds poetry on the peak, an explorer who sings the glories of the stars. Unfortunately, meeting him is not easy to do. He refuses to give interviews or photographs. Delia Defoe, his editor at Papyrus Publishing, claims that she has never met him or even spoken to him on the phone. "We correspond by email," she says. "We correspond by email," Nim repeated. It sounded important and funny. "I correspond with Alex Rover by email." "Selkie," she said, "Alex Rover's a hero." "Fred," she added, "I correspond with a hero." Selkie and Fred looked confused. They liked it when Nim used words they knew, like coconut and fish, swimming and keyhole cove. But Nim was happy. If Alex Rover could survive all those wonderful adventures, so could Jack. He'd be home tomorrow, just like he said. To aka at incognito.net. From Jack Rousseau at explorer.net. Date, Wednesday, 31st, March, 1827. "Dear Alex Rover, Jack is still away, but I hope he'll be home soon. I'm glad you're a hero because Mountain Madness is the best book I've ever read. It's like real life, except more exciting and everyone is so brave. And because it has a happy ending when the hero and the lady find each other and fall in love." From Nim. To Jack Rousseau at explorer.net. From aka at incognito.net. Date, Wednesday, 31st, March, 1332. "Dear Nim, aren't time differences funny? When it's nighttime where I live, the sun's coming up for you. You're living in my tomorrow. The other funny thought is me being a hero. I'm as unhero as anyone can be. I can climb mountains if they're made out of paper and swim rivers if they're in my bathtub with lots of bubble bath. I'm not even brave enough to talk to reporters. That's why they make up stories about me. One reporter even made up my name and called me Alexander. Yours, Alex Alexandra Rover." Nim had never heard the name Alexandra. Alex Rover had never thought that anyone could be all alone on a tiny island in the middle of the ocean. And so Nim went on thinking that Alex Rover was a man, and Alex went on thinking that Nim was a girl at home with her mothers and maybe brothers and sisters, cousins and friends. And they both thought that they understood each other perfectly. Far, far out in the ocean, a sailboat drifted. On its deck, a man lay sprawled like a boxer who had lost a fight. A frigate bird, his dark wings as wide as the man was tall, swooped curiously. Jack opened his eyes. He was hot, thirsty, and sore all over. When he scratched his beard, his hand came back rusty with dry blood. He sat up and remembered. He had been sitting on the deck watching the plankton glow on the nighttime waves. Suddenly, a storm had come roaring, and he had pulled down the sails, but the wind didn't care. It threw the boat sideways, and he'd reached for the satellite dish as it smashed to the deck. Now there was a cut on his head, and the satellite dish was gone. And if the satellite dish was gone, his phone wouldn't work, and he must go home to Nim. Jack's head hurt and his legs wobbled, but he staggered to the tiller. He pushed the tiller, and then he pulled it. But it swung loose and empty in his hand, and he knew his rudder was broken. If his rudder was broken, he couldn't steer. And if he couldn't steer, his boat was just a big piece of driftwood.